The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Last night, on Wednesday, August the 22nd, I moderated a town hall meeting for the organization North County Preservation in northern Baltimore County that took place at the Baltimore County Center for Maryland Agriculture on Shawan Road. The purpose of the meeting was to discuss an upcoming vote on zoning issues by the Baltimore County Council, scheduled for Tuesday, August the 28th. So why should the rest of the world care what happens in northern Baltimore County? Well, it's one of the most fertile regions between Virginia and New York that could potentially feed a lot of us in this region. 1.8 million of us and all of Baltimore City survive on its waters for our drinking water, and zoning farmland to housing developments could threaten all of that. Besides, it's land set aside for farms and the environment, a green space for all of us to enjoy. Development should be left to the suburbs and our city. So 3rd District County Councilman Todd Huff will make his zoning decision and present them to the whole county council on August the 28th to vote on it, to resolve what is called the CZMT, or Comprehensive Zoning Map process, done every 4 years. It could change everything, and this is a meeting to hear the people's voices, and we'll share that with you now. Throughout the meeting, you'll hear insight from 5 panelists: Teresa Moore from the Valley's Planning Council, Jim Constable of the Manor Conservancy, Mike Pierce of North County Preservation, Sharon Bailey of the Pretty Boy Watershed Alliance, and Theo LaGarder, the Gunpowder Riverkeeper, and from members of the audience who attended this town meeting. So this is another way to be heard. So we did ask Todd Huff to join us this evening. I personally asked him, and we had a long conversation. He decided not to come. He doesn't want to talk anymore about the zoning process. He wants to just wait until the 28th when he makes his decision to be heard, and declined to come. And when I spoke with him today, also declined to give a statement on a recorded statement about what he thought, what he wanted to say. He said, I will talk after the 28th. When we did have a long talk last Monday, a week ago, and we talked today to his staff members, they thought our conversation was off the record. I thought it was on the record. So we, out of courtesy to him, we're not going to talk about what we talked about until after the 28th. And we'll see what happens then. So that's, once they get that, I'll let you all know that. Let me introduce our panel. Teresa Moore is with us. She's Executive Director of the Valley's Planning Council. And this is celebrating their 50th year. Big part of this conversation will be them. Next to Teresa is Jim Constable, who is president of the Manor Conservancy. Next to Jim is Sharon Bailey with the Pretty Boy Watershed Alliance and the Baltimore County Commission on Environmental Quality. And next to her is Mike Pierce, who is president of North County Preservation. And next to Mike Pierce is Theo LaGarder, who is Gunpowder Riverkeeper. Welcome to have you all here. So let's begin this. I mean, I think that one of the things we know about this region, this area that we live in, is that it is one of the greenest places between Virginia and New York City. Some of the most fertile farmland in that area is right here in Baltimore County, in this part of Baltimore County. We'll explore that, what it means in terms of the zoning process, what people feel needs to happen. We're also going to talk in some greater way about why this is important to people outside of the 3rd Councilmatic District of Baltimore County. Because people can look at this as a very esoteric conversation. As many people would look at it, saving land for a lot of rich people in northern Baltimore County, which is how many people beyond the region of the 3rd District look at it. And we'll talk about that and what the realities are and why this affects more than just the people who may reside here and what it means to develop in this area. So that's how we'll start. And I thought we'd just kind of take a step back. Because all this kind of really began in 1962, when a group of people got together to create the plan for this county. And what that led to over the years, that led to a lot of things, even to the smart growth plan of Glendenning, to the zoning laws in Baltimore County. It led to a beginning of a process of cooperation between people who lived here, council people, executives, and more, to preserve this area. But rather than I try to kind of get this out, let me turn this over to Teresa Moore to give us a bit of that history and a little background about what that all means.
Thank you. The plan for the Valleys, as Mark said, the Valleys Planning Council is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. And in 1962, they commissioned the plan for the Valleys, which was a plan that was done by a someone who became a renowned landscape architect, Ian McCarg, and a planner named David Wallace. And they had the idea, which was unusual at the time, to base a plan, a landscape plan, on the ecology. And so they decided where the areas would be best to handle growth and where the areas would be best to preserve. And what they came up with were several recommendations, but the key ones were to limit the provision of public water and sewer as a way of controlling growth, developing resource conservation zoning to protect land, and also to permanently protect land through conservation easements. Everybody here can see the results today. I mean, a lot of things happened over the five decades. The county did a lot, elected officials did a lot, people did a lot, community associations. And everybody was taking the big picture view of what the cumulative impacts would be of growth and what would be the best way to handle it. And so today we do have 1/3 of the county is served by public water and sewer, and 2/3 of the county is zoned for resource conservation. And we also have 60,000 acres under easement. So that's a pretty good track record. And that's a lot to be proud of. Baltimore County is known nationally for its good work in smart growth. And one of the reasons we were able to make that achievement is because we got started early before the sprawl happened. A lot of people ask me how they can get an urban-rural demarcation line, and it's a little late for some places. It had to go in early. And the one thing that we're, people say, well, you've done so much, you can kind of relax now, and that isn't really the case. Most of our waters are still impaired. Our reservoir system that, serves 1.8 million people has a lot of issues, salt being one of them. And we have a lot more to do. The state is on a pollution diet that's mandated by the federal government. We have a new septics bill. And really what we have to do is improve on what's already out there. We can't just not create any more pollution. We have to undo some of what we did wrong to start with. So we do have our work cut out for us, and we do have to do more, even though we've already done a pretty good job.
And let me just let you all just jump in. And don't forget, there's a mic there. We really want you to use that mic. You hear something that motivates you to jump up. I want you to jump up and say what you have to say. And part of the thing is, I think we should just talk about right up front here, is that this CZMP process will be done on the 28th. The council will vote on it. The council usually always votes the way the district council person suggests that they all vote. Probably no matter what we say here today, will have very little effect on what happens on the 28th. But the question is why it's important and what we think we're facing now and why people on this panel and people who actually call this meeting think that it's important to get this out on the table today.
Building on what was just said and speaking in my capacity as appointment to the Commission on Environmental Quality for Baltimore County and Baltimore County's tradition of excellence in planning. Baltimore County really was, as she said, an early adapter in smart growth, and they were practicing smart growth long before that term was coined and in other circles. We really were an early adapter in that. And when the IRTL was established in 1967, and since that time, today, 87% of the county's population lives within the IRTL, and the balance outside in the rural areas. And I think that level of continuity in planning is really unprecedented in other metropolitan areas. So for 40 years, we have been consistent in carrying out that original planning idea. So that's why this CZMP, well, like all CZMPs, but this one in particular, is very important to continue that level of continuity. Because of all of the challenges, there are always challenges. But this particular CZMP is especially challenging because we have had someone in the county council who honored that planning idea for three terms in office. And we don't know how this councilman is going to vote. That's why everyone is very concerned.
I want to jump in and talk a little bit about conservation easements because there is an interlock between them and zoning, and Todd Huff has kind of passed the message to me that there's even more of an interlock than we would think. We always, until about the late 70s, relied on zoning for land preservation. As Teresa mentioned, the community groups led by Valleys Planning worked to get some of the most restrictive rural zoning, RC2 and RC4, in the country, and did a great job. But we all knew that zoning is fickle. Good zoning lasts only as long as a good county councilman who's tuned into our interests lasts, and it can change overnight. And in the late 70s, the Internal Revenue Service offered a tax incentive for people to donate conservation easements, which are really private agreements that last forever in perpetuity between a landowner and a conservation organization to preserve conservation values on land. And where we are in the North County, it's mainly agricultural land and open space. One way councilmen approach some of these zoning issues, which I don't necessarily agree with, is they look at it and say, well, you know, the landowner wants this up zone to commercial. I know it's in a rural area, but can't you all work out a deal and have covenants and restrictions? That's been mentioned to me any number of times on issues I deal with. And my answer is, that's not the right way to approach zoning. Zoning is about good land use planning. It's not about individual landowners and what they want. It's not about people. It's about community and land. If your restrictions are in these private covenants, it means every time there's a violation, the community's got to get together, they got to get a lawyer, they got to file a suit for an injunction, and by the time they're through there, even if they win, it's too late. You know, the smart businessman who may be violating this zone just says, well, that's the cost of my doing business. I'm willing to pay for a little bit of legal fight just so I can carry on and make a profit. It's a very tough situation, and it seems to be an issue that has come up more and more in this particular zoning cycle. The desire to grant a zoning request and pressure on the community that opposes it to enter into covenants and restrictions, which is not a good thing.
The power of politics is important to kind of wrestle with here in terms of how decisions are made, which is part of the problem that people think is a systemic problem that we need to come back to, I think, and wrestle with here. But I also want to kind of throw out here, why is it important beyond the boundaries of this northern county that 1,000 acres or so are, as some people would say, in danger of being upzoned, danger of having their zoning changed from what people look at, what does that mean? We say RC7 to an RC4, whatever that is. We can talk about what those things mean. But why is that a danger, and why should anybody care if they don't live across the street from it?
The short answer, Mark, is impervious surface. When we talk about development pressure on North County, what development interests tend to push is that there's an inherent need for more housing in the North County. The other side of that is that with more development come more roads, typically more roof lines and more impervious surface. That is the short answer. And the surface water that we see in Baltimore County in small streams and larger rivers does comprise 100% of the drinking water, as Teresa mentioned, that is inherent in the reservoirs and in the Gunpowder River that provide drinking water for 1.8 million residents, not only of the county, but of the city and the four counties that use this water. So the water is a shared resource that flows through the county, and the county in a preserved state does a good job of keeping this water quality high. That, I think, is the short answer. In talking about what we've lost since the European settlers landed on the shores of Maryland, we've lost nearly 16,500 miles of cold water habitat statewide. This is not really a fish versus houses issue, but the fish are always good indicators of high water quality. And the high water quality is not something that should be used as a bargaining chip when we're talking about development interests.
Not only is it the water source for 1.8 million people in the Baltimore metropolitan area, but it's the breadbasket of Baltimore County, and the green infrastructure is the lungs of the Baltimore metropolitan area. So for all of those reasons, it matters for the economy and the public health of the entire Baltimore metropolitan area.
Let me just ask this very kind of sticky question that people always wrestle with in this, and that has to do with the question of a property owner's right to develop their land and make money, and a community's right to keep land zoned agricultural or zoned for environmental purposes for public use. And I mean, that is an issue. So parse that out for a minute.
You know, that we fought that battle a long time ago, that zoning is an appropriate thing. Now, it If at this point you change the zoning of somebody's property, well, it's why the decision can't be taken lightly. And it's why, you know, those who have to make the decision are in a very tight spot because it is such a serious matter.
Jim, you're going to say what?
I mean, it's been recognized as the police power of the government for the health, safety, comfort, and welfare of the citizens to enact zoning laws to restrict. If you really think about it, if you didn't have zoning, if everybody could put a house on a half an acre, nobody's land would be worth a plugged nickel because you'd flood the market with development lot. And I want to add on to where zoning and upzoning could really hurt. The economic development for the state and the county is tremendously important. Having such a green area in the Baltimore metropolitan area is a real asset to attract people that want to live in a green area. That's an economic development reason. They bring their businesses in here. Another reason is we probably have in the North County the highest concentration of acres that are listed on the National Register of Historic Places of any place in the country. That is national recognition of the historic character of these thousands and thousands of acres listed. That is a real asset for the county, for the state, and for the United States citizen. Zoning is a very good thing. It's a very profitable thing for everybody. It's not a negative.
Let's open up.
My name is Bob Shaw. I live in the Sparks community. And along with the Goscheny sisters, Karen and Mary Jane Goscheny, and others here in the community and in the audience, we collected 1,500 signatures against the upzoning of the Obrecht property and making them into townhomes. And we collected over 600 signatures against the development of the Fate Farm. We presented this same issue to Councilman McIntyre 4 years ago, and we had half the amount of signatures, and he basically told us, show me what the community has to say about that, and I will listen to you. And so he collected half the signatures that we have at this zoning issue. He listened to us, and he was against both those issues. Now we're faced with the same fight, and we've collected twice the amount of signatures, brought it to Councilman Huff, and was told that his basic premise is he's for landowners' rights. He took our petitions. He does have them. But on the other hand, he says, if you haven't lived in this area for 25 years, I kind of don't hold that very strongly in terms of the community. And I'm not sure where he went with that, but that's basically the 2 times that I met with him. That's basically what he said. And others have heard the same thing. If the vote does not go our way in 6 days after the community has spoken and Todd Huff has done what he thinks is right for the community, how is it that we can potentially get a referendum so that we're not held ransom by one person who makes a decision on our entire community and that our voices are heard sometime in the future? I might add that when I listened to Councilman Huff speak at the Broadmead community, and I think it was in October, he did say that Obrecht did give him money for his campaign, and I would remind everybody that he also has a family-run business 1.5 miles down the road from where he wants to develop these townhomes, and one could think, and I don't know for this for a fact, but if there's more cars on the road, of course his family community is going to profit from this. So to be held ransom like this by one person, I'd like to know how we develop some type of referendum so that our voices can be heard in the future and this doesn't happen again if it doesn't go our way.
And I've heard Councilman Huff say on more than one occasion what the gentleman said that he said to him, which is, if you haven't lived here for 25 years, you have no voice, which he said to us, well, he didn't say it to me, he said it to my wife, and said to other people who have talked to him, and I think that's a real issue. And so the question is, then what do you do? You've seen referendums in this state over gambling, over every other thing, marriage equality, the Dream Act. You saw it in Baltimore City around changing councilmatic districts to individual councilmatic districts that they did 3 times, and they won after the 3rd time they put in a referendum, what the majority of citizens wanted in the city. So, I mean, I know it's tough, but getting a referendum is not impossible. No. It's not an impossibility. It just takes organizing effort and people to get enough signatures to push it.
The obvious way, by the time you get a referendum going, if you ever do it, it's time for another election. So, you know, there you go right there.
Madam, please go ahead.
Thank you. I can tie my comment into what we just talked about. My name is Ruth Mascara from Moncton, and I'm retired senior state planner. And I want to say that the CZMP process is the most flawed land use process planning tool I could possibly imagine. We do not require in this process that there be any criteria. We require criteria in everything else we do, in every other process, if it's landmarks, if it's road establishment. There, we don't have water, we don't have transportation, we don't have density, we don't have schools, we don't have any kind of criteria. The land use zoning process for Baltimore County is done on the whim of one person without regard to the rule of law. And the last time I checked, we're supposed to be doing it that way. So I suggest that we look at the whole process, not throw it out, but look at it so that it can be modified and adjusted so there are criteria that have to be, whether it's planning council, planning board, whoever has input, that should be part of the criteria. Thank you.
That's one of the issues was raised to me by several people in this process, was that one of the systemic problems here is how the decisions are made. You wonder what people have to do in these communities to have their voice heard, to have it make a difference.
Ruth's comments were all very valid, but also what Jim had said earlier, that the county council, this is one of their main powers. This is one of the main things that they do. And to regulate that or restrict that in any way, they're just not motivated to do that. So to impose regulations, to expect them to be a self-regulating body is optimistic.
Sir, please.
I'm Doug Carroll. Ruth said a lot of what I was going to say, but I would add to that even though Baltimore County has very strong zoning, there's no other jurisdiction that changes it or brings it up for change every 4 years. That really should be a 10-year cycle. I attended numerous zoning change meetings when Dale Anderson was making the decisions. And that was quite a while ago, but I've been doing this a long time, and that was a giveaway. This was designed, this four-year cycle, for a county councilman to be able to give away value in order to get reelected. There was never such thing as a down zoning. That was unheard of till Brian, really. And even as late as Jim Smith, as our county councilman, being a devout Catholic, gave three or four Catholic organizations an absolute unjustifiable giveaway. Being from the second district, if I'd have been in the third district, I would just be ashamed to be in the third district if I were all of you to have let this election happen. How did you let this guy follow Brian McIntyre? I can't believe it. I believe that a suit can be filed if decisions are made due to favoritism in opposition to the planning board's decision, opposition to the planning board's recommendation, opposition to Deprim's recommendation, and you can show favoritism. Todd Huff told me, I don't think he was joking, although I can never tell, that Judge Turnbull's his godfather. I think that's true. I think if you add that to the planning board recommendation, the Deprim's decision, and the fact that the neighbor placed their land into an MET easement based on his present zoning, there's probably a lawsuit there that would at least hold things up a long time. So perhaps every one of these decisions that community disagrees with should immediately be brought up again as an emergency zoning decision, which goes before a judge, and all the previous data I mentioned, favoritism, planning board recommendation, Deprim decision would come up in that process. I'm sure Jim would like to handle the case. Thank you.
Sir.
I'm Jay Wright Witcher. I live in Phoenix. I have 2 points to make. It definitely is clear that there are broader than just CZMP kinds of repercussions and implications of this whole discussion. An example which should be germane here is NiSource, Columbia Gas and Electric's proposal to build a 21-mile, 40-inch gas line from Owings Mills to, Falston. And when you then get into a federal process, and with all due respect to the regulations that may not be being complied with right now, it is also true that for the past at least two administrations, probably more, enforcement of those violations has been almost entirely absent. So now we have a federal project coming through that proposes to take along a 21-mile easement additional 75-foot easements for construction, much of it through untouched older-growth forest that they are going to clear-cut and bring all through. These are like right, they're going to go underneath the Gunpowder River if the proposal gets approved. So there are broader implications, and it's something that I think we should all take to heart when we go to the polls and when we write to our elected representatives. The second point I want to make, not to belabor anything, is back on the CZMP process. I think we need to recognize that the impunity that we all seem to be concerned about here, with which a decision can be made without participation, without hearing the voice of the public, is also characterized, not infrequently, by what I would say are inappropriate relationships between the elected official and some of the petitioners. We have 179... We have a proposal where I live along Stockton Road in Cooper, just south of the manor, where a 179-acre parcel has been proposed by Cunningham Kitchens, a subsidiary of Sinclair Broadcasting, David Smith's company, to be upzoned from RC2, where it has been a family farm forever. They've already purchased the farm from the prior owners, and they privately assure our councilmen that they do not intend to develop it. That instead, what their real goal is to get it to RC4 so that the value that they might derive from it, using my money to pay them, if that's in fact their desire for the development rights, would be higher, and they get a better tax break. Even if that's not true, a one-on-one private chit-chat between a billionaire and a councilman that results in an agreement that the moment that councilman is not going to be reelected is anybody's game. Anybody could happen. The next owner of that house could come in and say, it's RC4. I want a zone development. I want 29 residences on that. And this is a half a mile from Loch Raven. Now, I believe these things should concern us and that they are things that we need to stand up and fight for loudly.
That was the first half of our recording from the town hall meeting sponsored by the North County Preservation that I moderated. We will continue to hear from our five panelists as well as members of the audience after this brief break. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines, where you can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Updated information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. 1-800-638-7781. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. Tonight we share a recording of a town meeting I moderated last night, Wednesday, August 22nd, sponsored by North County Preservation, where we were joined by environmental and zoning experts, as well as concerned members of the community, to discuss an upcoming county council vote that could change the preserved rural character of northern Baltimore County and that could affect our entire region. Let's jump right back into that conversation from last night.
Hi, my name is Tammy Vetter, and this is Michelle Tursell. We both live in northern Baltimore County. This is actually the first meeting I've attended. I don't know about Michelle.
This is the first I've attended.
But we wanted to share our experiences, and we had hoped that Mr. Huff was here because I've talked to him quite a few times, and he was actually at my house a couple weeks ago. But I wanted to share my experiences with you. We live in Tracy's Crossing, which is a development off of Middletown Road on Rockdale. It's about 12 housing sites. And as part of the agreement to develop the area, the farmer who was selling the land to the developer agreed to have a band of forest conservation surrounding the complete community with the road, Rockdale Road, going down the center. Starting in maybe the end of June, July, the farmers started to harvest that forest conservation. They had completed about 90% when they were behind my house, and at that point I thought that they had taken down a tree on my property, which I was very upset about. And these are very large trees. In fact, the tree that I was concerned about, the diameter, was over 30 inches. So those trees are so big you can't even put your arms around them. And they are beautiful oak trees and some other trees as well. Anyway, I called the police. Councilman Huff came out the next day. They put a temporary stop order. The next day, Vince Gardinia at the EPS filed a permanent stop order, but what was found was that when they issued the permit to harvest the forest, that they never looked back at the agreement that was filed in 2004. And so we've lost those trees surrounding the whole development. We've continued to contact the EPS. We've contacted the Sierra Club.
I'm Michelle Tercel. I have been to Vince Gardina's office about 3 weeks ago now to ask him what is going to be done about the situation, because with all the heavy equipment back in there, I mean, they took down several hundreds of trees, several hundred, okay? The big machinery that they've used has caused a lot of erosion. Down over the hill there is a stream, so can that be eventually contaminated? The loggers that were in there have made an entire mess of brush. You know, they trimmed off the logs of what they did not want. They left in the woods. They left trees that they cut down they did not want. So are we susceptible this fall or any time for brush fires at this point? And there was nobody in Vince's office when my husband and I stopped in there, and he would not see us. I have contacted Councilman Huff, and his secretary emailed me back and said they're going to check into it and get back to us. I have heard nothing. I also contacted Kevin Kamenet's office. His secretary also emailed me back and said, we're going to forward this to the EPS. That was 2 weeks ago. I have heard nothing. So, yeah, which is Vince Gardina. So where can we go from here at this point?
I think you need to see a lawyer.
That is our next step. We are going to contact
one. Yeah, yeah.
Because the permit that Arthur Tracy got from the county, I don't want to say, illegally, because the property behind us is zone conservation. It backs up to Pretty Boy.
Reservoir.
Right. No, I'm very interested in, please give me your address, because I'd like to go out and
oh,
see
please.
The site. Because it's in our watershed, it concerns me very much.
Yes.
You know, those are legally binding documents. I don't know why that happened.
The story we just heard epitomizes all the things that people have been talking about over the months about what is potentially about to happen in the whole area. I mean, it's at least 1,000 acres could be rezoned, which means developed. What will be the effect if this goes through? You know, from all the properties we've talked about, whether they're close to here, like Turnbull and Barney's, or whether they're out further out in the northern part of the county, what difference will it make? What effect will it have if those happen?
Mark, I'd like to start and say that a single tree, can typically, say it's 18 inches in diameter, can take up about 40 gallons of stormwater. That's one tree. And these ladies are talking about hundreds of trees. I had a similar experience with the county last year related to an agricultural conservation easement that was not in compliance, and severely not in compliance. And I would suggest that if you feel you've exhausted all of your efforts with the county, to not wait any further for them to get back to you and contact Aaron Fitzsimmons in the Environmental Crimes Unit of the Attorney General's Office and have them contact the county on your behalf and on behalf of the trees.
And we fail to recognize, I think, as a society, the monetary value of these ecosystems, that the value of natural ecosystem services that trees provide. There's carbon sequestration and the water filtration that Theo alluded to. The air quality that they provide, the biohabitat that they provide for animals and fish, even the leaves that oak trees that fall in the stream provide cover and food for fish. They stabilize the soil and they provide shade. These are these have real monetary value, and development takes away from that.
Let's go back to the audience, folks.
Hi, Mark. I'm Harold Burns. I want to address property rights. I'm a property owner, and I own a part of a stream. And because of that, I came to learn about riparian rights. When I bought my land, I bought rights that included the rights to that water to continue to flow across my land in the same quality and the same quantity. And that's a common law right that goes back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. I have that right. And when somebody upstream puts in more than 5% impervious surface, which is not much, RC5 is definitely going to be way over 5% impervious surface. That's going to introduce so much heat into my stream that it'll kill my trout, plainly changing the quality of the water and violating my rights.
I want to come to this question of legality of what could take place in the zoning process that fits into what you're saying in a second. Want to say something quick, Jim?
No, he's right. In riparian rights, the downstream owner has certain rights, and the upstream owner cannot do anything unreasonable. And it's a question of defining unreasonable. And there have been successful cases in that. Actually, I've handled cases like that before and been successful. But let me drop back to the previous ladies who were talking about the trees. You know, we were talking about the danger to trees from just any legitimate development, but the real problem that they were addressing was not the legitimate development, but the failure to abide by restrictions that came with the development. And this is a constant problem. The other thing to do is try to lobby for better law with stricter penalties. Our penalties are not strong enough. These developers do these things, and it's a cost of doing business. They get their hands slapped, and then they go about doing it again. So that's what we need, stricter penalties.
My name is Rich Kulowick, and I live in Sparks, although not for 25 years, so perhaps I should sit back down. 2 points. First, to follow on what Theo is saying, he takes a keen interest in the river because of his position, so do I. I'm a part-time kayak instructor, and I spend a lot of time in the streams here, so I'm tuned in to what they do. Not only does the destruction of the trees and the forest around us exacerbate the runoff, it also exacerbates drought, removing the capacity of the system to store groundwater. 10 years ago this month, we were in a pretty severe drought. Pretty Boy looked like a puddle. Loch Raven wasn't much better. We were bringing in water from the Susquehanna for 1.8 million people. Today, I checked the level. The gunpowder is running 20 CFS above what it was 10 years ago today, and the only reason it's doing that well is the passing thunderstorms of the past 2 weeks. We are slowly removing our ability to maintain this watershed. If we keep doing this, eventually there are going to be a lot of thirsty people. Second point, more specific to this area, because I know there's been some comments about the possible development along York Road. If you drive up York Road from here, you will find, just in this area, the Fila building, which has been empty for years. You'll find a strip mall in front of it that now has 3 empty storefronts because it's where businesses go to die. And further up, across from the big water tower at York and is that Loveton Circle, you'll find a huge lot that was clear-cut nearly a decade ago in preparation for office development that never happened because the economy went south. If you cross the road into Loveton Farms, you'll find there's plenty of housing. People can't sell their condos and their townhomes. So it's not like we have a lack of office space. It's not like we have a lack of housing in this area. There isn't a crying need for any of these things, especially at the cost of destruction of more habitat.
There are already 500 lots in Baltimore, in this part of Baltimore County, that are zoned for development. 500 already exist. So, Theo, do you want to respond to what you just heard?
I like what I heard. And the gentleman that was up just before, our friend that plies the gunpowder in the kayak, really was pointing more towards a Clean Water Act suit than even a riparian rights suit, because the Clean Water Act is celebrating its 40th year this year. Nixon was known for a lot of good work, but that was one that was quite superb. And the Clean Water Act does give anyone in the U.S. the right to sue based on a diminished right to fishable, swimmable, and drinkable water.
Sir.
What I wanted to do is get back to the process issue a little bit about the CZMP process. How do we take the power away from the councilmen? And the councilmen, are, as was correctly pointed out, are not going to give up their power by changing the process. But one way to do it, and I don't want to get shouted out of the room yet, but there is another process for development, and that is the planned unit development. It does have a hearing component. It does have a decision by an administrative law judge, and it does have the right of appeal that to the court system that would allow for public review of the process. But as was pointed out earlier, the big hurdle is getting over the relinquishing of the power of the county council. You need to elect people to the county council that would be willing to entertain a change to the process to allow public involvement. And if you get that public involvement, if you get a negative decision in the hearing officer decision or administrative law judge decision, you do have some legal recourse. And so I just want everybody to know that there's potential, but it's going to take a concerted effort of all the citizens of the county, because you're going to be dealing with all seven councilmatic districts, and you're almost never going to get them all to make the change. But it would be a great desire of mine to see something like that happen throughout the county. I hate to hear people say we can't do it. I think if we all put our minds and hearts to it, there is a possibility of something like that happen.
There's something that I think we should, we have about 20 minutes left, and I want to be able to kind of get some things on the table, and also other people out here in the audience. But one of the things that, in thinking about this evening, and Sharon Billy, I think it was you who said it to me as we were talking about this, was that if certain zoning is changed to allow greater development in Baltimore County, part of Baltimore County, that would affect the water that everyone drinks in Baltimore City, Harford County, Carroll County, into Howard County. You mentioned that it may in fact be illegal. There may be some other issues that are beyond just zoning. Would you talk to that?
First of all, we're currently involved in something called the Watershed Implementation Program. It stems from a court case. Some of you may have read about it over the past year. Suit was brought in federal court in Virginia against all of the Chesapeake Bay watershed states, saying that enough had not been done to help the health of the Chesapeake Bay. And so as a settlement of that case, all of the Chesapeake Bay watershed states have been required to comply with EPA standards to improve the quality, ultimately the quality of the Chesapeake Bay. Also, we have an agreement with all of the other regional jurisdictions that the reservoirs serve, called the Reservoir Management Agreement, where we agree, all of the jurisdictions agree to implement basically smart growth planning and zoning plans that will protect our resources. So any plans and zoning that runs counter to that is a breach of that agreement. So these are just two examples where we are legally bound to have zoning and land use planning that protects our water and other natural resources.
Well, I mean, and to wit, I mean, one of the things that I think is a disappointing when you talk about the soil and land and about agriculture and the future of agriculture in Baltimore County, whether you're a grain farmer or whether you're one of these new farmers who are have CSAs and working and farming in a different way, the state covered the properties you're talking about. If you look at the Turnbull property, as one of the things that people have talked about, petitions have been signed, that 70% of that site is class 1, 2, and 3 soil. The Barney property is the same, except for the parts that you can't build on because of where it is. The tree farm that people are talking about in Mount Carmel, 81% of that land is graded as top soil. These are issues that don't come up, but they are really important to this conversation, is preserving this. If the future of farming and agriculture and feeding people in America and feeding people in our region comes from preserving land where crops can be grown, it seems to me you're taking the future of our children and the food that they will eat away the more you develop. Because these lands have the potential of being, along with a few other places in Maryland, the breadbasket for an entire region. And I think that's something that doesn't get into this conversation enough. One of the things that Councilman Huff did say to me was, no matter what decisions are made, that he's had assurances from people like Judge Turnbull, who is also his godfather, and the people from Sinclair, that they will, he said those things, that they will not use the new zoning to develop. They just wanted to make more money on their land. So that is fairly consistent in what we've heard. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Jen Powers. I am a certified planner, and I'm an environmental planner. And I work out in the field. I work in a very urban county. We are doing a lot with water quality, so I can tell you, I've seen what happens when you have too much impervious surface. You have streams that are 10 feet deep because the fire hose of stormwater has run through. So these are costs that those county taxpayers have to pay to mitigate because the development was not done in the first place. It was not done properly. There's a lot of pollution we all have to pay for, and everything that Sharon said was correct about higher cost pollution abatement, the pollution diet. What I did want to point out about this decision to upzone 400 acres of farmland is that it doesn't bring in as much as it costs. We pay for the infrastructure costs. We pay for road water pollution. We pay for the roads. We pay for the schools. We pay for everything. We subsidize that. So if you want to subsidize that and pay those higher taxes, it's on you. We don't gain from that. We lose quality of life. We lose working lands. We lose working farms and forests. Those farms and forests, they protect us against flooding. They protect us against storms, water quality, air quality. We lose those benefits, and we get a development that increases our taxes. So Todd Huff is affecting your bottom line. This isn't just about bugs and bunnies. It's about your costs. So it's your decision. I'd send an email. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Wayne McGinnis. I was chairman of the first ag land preservation group in the county for about 10 years. I have photographs of the county in the 1900. I have aerial photographs in 1950 and aerial photographs today. I can say without reservation, there are many more trees than there ever been in the 100-year history of this county. There are many more deer than I never saw deer growing up. I'm a fourth generation on our farm. And there are thousands and millions of more people living in this area than there were 100 years ago. So I don't want to hear anybody ever blame the farmers for something that's happening today. Secondly, a little bit about how the planning board works. We just passed a master plan last year that rules the county, should rule the zoning. This was completely ignored in some of the cases. For instance, the one the gentleman just talked about on Stockton Road. It's clearly outside of the Erdl line. It's clearly would add 35 more houses. And the planning staff had recommended this. I don't know why. The makeup of the planning board is there's one member from each councilman, which is seven, and they usually listen to the communities. And you have eight members appointed by the county executive. And very often, they are more toward development.
Frances Smith, I live on Belfast Road in Sparks, and I would just like Todd Huff to know that I have an ability to speak. I have lived there for 49 years, and he still doesn't listen, so that's baloney. In any case, I agree with literally everything just about that's been said tonight, but what I really want to focus on, it's only been touched on lightly, is the degradation to the water table and the aquifer. The Sun, just about a month ago, published an article about how the aquifer that serves southern Maryland and the eastern shore, which is literally millions of years old, is beginning to dry up and not get replenished. Well, the same thing is true here. And a new development, I mean, any of you who were here in the drought 10 years ago that the gentleman referred to will know that new wells had to be dug. It lasted 2 years. It was a very difficult situation for all of us. You put another 200, 300, 400 houses on that same water table, and who is going to pay for the water that we will be needing? Thank you.
My name's Paul Dungera. I live in Catonsville in District 1, and I was invited tonight. I'm a community activist and involved in a lot of local land use issues in my district. And I think it's important to keep in mind that, you know, when we talk about smart growth and look at the goals of Plan Maryland, focus around urban areas and, transit-oriented hubs like Catonsville, like District 1, it's really important to kind of urge our county council to have a process planning that's not steered by the developers. In our area, we have a lot of areas of open space, the Spring Grove State Hospital being one, a large area located on Johnny Cake Road between Johnny Cake and Dogwood that was previously outside of the URDL, that they moved the URDL in 2008. And upzone from a rural conservation zoning to business major zoning. So a lot of smart growth language is being used at the expense of potentially open space in these already urbanized area. The EPA says that the success of any smart growth program depends upon the commitment of long-term acquisition of open space. And as the high density growth in my district comes, you know, to fruition, open space is going to be more required. And we're here to help District 3. I'm going to help organize with the people that called me here to help lend our soldiers to your soldiers. I hope that can be returned and you can get some feet on the ground in District 1 when we need some help. And I'd like to echo the sentiment of, I think it's a great thing that everybody came out tonight. Thanks.
Thank you.
Judy Waldman, and I've been involved in zoning and CZMP for many, many years, and I have lived here for over 30 years. I believe that sometimes a bad situation provides a silver lining, and I think that in this community there is a silver lining to what happened in the last councilmanic election, and that is look at all of you people who are coming forth, who are providing now new talented, energetic organizations organized together, and you'll see that what you've got just in this room is an amazing amount of possibility for the future and preserving this land and these waters that we hold so dearly. So this is the silver lining. You are the silver lining to what has happened, and I just say keep it up.
That was from a recording we did yesterday, August 22nd, with the North County Preservation at the Baltimore County Center for Maryland Agriculture. To hear an extended version of what we recorded there, please visit our website, steinershow.org. And for more information, you can go to northcountypreservation.org. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producer is Justin Levy. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Stephanie Mavronis, and Mark Gunnery. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews and Clean Cuts for WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.